You're listening to Cairo News Radio Middays.
Welcome back to Cairo News Radio Middays. Jack Stein, Spike O'Neill, Mr. Community Bike Parking Locker, right?
Yeah, it's me. Got a tattoo on my lower back that says that.
Spike, you know what's crazy to me is how fast the conspiracy media cycle begins when there is tragedy in this country. I was just reading about the identity of the shooter in Nashville, the murderer in Nashville. And I won't say this person's name because I have a personal policy that I picked up over the years. I know other organizations do it as well. I know the Daily Wire doesn't mention the name of shooters. I know that there are other publications that just avoid it. And I do the same thing. I just don't think it's appropriate. So this individual was identified. It's a 28-year-old white woman. And one of the things that I've found concerning about this, Spike, is that people are saying on Twitter and on social media, they're saying, well, look at how fast they scrubbed, quote, in quotation marks, this person's social media accounts. And they're saying that this is suspicious and that this is indicative of, you know, whatever they might say, right? There's something odd about this. But what they don't realize is that after the mass shooting and mass murder in Isla Vista, I won't mention that young man's name, there was a, you know what I'm talking about, Spike, the guy who, incel?
Yeah. Okay.
So what happened to that guy's social media posts is that they were left up by Facebook and YouTube and Instagram for a period of time. And so people took those images, and these are very damaged people, and they made homages to this guy.
Right.
And so they would make, you know, video montages, picture collages, and they would make homages to this guy that they called the Incel King. And after that happened, a lot of these social media companies got a lot of flack for it, rightfully so, that they didn't immediately take it down. So now what a lot of these social media companies have is they have a policy where once they find out the identity of the individual, if they are contacted by the law enforcement department, they take down that information. And it happens very, very quickly for the reason so that we don't have another instance where this person can be celebrated by some of the darker members of our community.
Yeah.
That's the reason, right? But if you go and I won't mention these political pundits' names, but there are prominent political pundits that are out there saying, look at the media or look at how these have been scrubbed and look at how it's not on the internet anymore. I'm reading the New York Post. I'm reading CNN. I'm reading MSNBC. This individual's name is all over the media. But there are people out there that love to cash into this narrative, Spike. And it is so gross to me that on the day that, you know, six people are brutally murdered, you have people who are making hay out of tragedy trying to say, well, look at how they're trying to cover this up. And I just think, how can anybody be so sick and deranged? Not to start this off on a dark note, Spike, but
no, we had fun, you know, last hour. It's back to work time, and I totally respect what you're saying.
Sure.
The people who make hay from this, who are adding to the problem, they're inspiring the next wave of conspiracy theorists who have to, you know, feel that they are called to take action and do whatever sick, twisted version of, I don't want to use, it might be patriotism, it might be nationalism, it might be whatever.
Nationalism, I would say. Probably.
Yeah, I mean, it's broken. It's a warped, broken way to look at life. And the folks who monetize and capitalize on this for their own personal celebrity, their own personal brand value. It's horrific. It's not like losing a family member in any way, shape, or form, but it is equally as dark and tasteless and sickening.
Yeah, and if I wasn't such a classy guy, I would mention these people by name, but because I'm a class act, I won't, and people can just, you know,
there goes the value they seek. And the notoriety.
Right. Yes. So what these people want, and these are mainstream political commentators, they want me to say so-and-so said XYZ.
Right, right.
And they want me to signal boost their brand and their name so other people go, can you believe what so-and-so said about – and so this, they use tragedy like this to try to up their
brand value. I fell victim to this last week. I quoted a ridiculous statement by a guy that I don't think very highly of for the way he runs – his media empire, and you told me exactly what he was attempting was signal boosting,
right?
So I'm trying to learn too, and I'm trying to learn to be better.
signal boosting, just so people know, is when you have a political commentator, could be anybody, could be Anderson Cooper, could be Tucker Carlson, doesn't really matter. But normally it happens with lower level political commentators, people on the internet, so on and so forth. And what they do is they say something outrageous, something that no human being would think that is would be civil or acceptable in a free and fair society, right? For example, Michael Knowles very famously, I'm going to violate my own rule here for a second, but Michael Knowles said at CPAC a couple weeks ago that we needed to eradicate transgenderism in American society. Now, this is not what a sane person said. This is not what a healthy discussion sounds like in the United States. Nope. Around trans individuals. But he says it, and then all the media outlets pick it up, and then everybody talks about Michael Knowles for a week, and then he gets to renegotiate his contract to get him a bigger number because he's got so much, you know, social media clout and numbers that he can then show. This is the way the media system works, and there are mainstream figures who do the exact same thing, and they do it every day. You just don't hear about it because it happens on Twitter or it happens on Instagram, and so the signal is low until it breaks through at the national level. And so when you have people saying, well, look at the FBI scrubbing this person's social media accounts, not mentioning to people that the reason that Instagram and Facebook and YouTube do this is to prevent what happened in 2014 from happening again, you do people a disservice, and you do so intentionally to try to keep them ignorant on the issue. So, and rather than focus on the kids and rather than focus on the scenario, what do we then talk about? We talk about the deep state and we talk about government. We talk, you know, we go off into this weird tangent as opposed to focusing on the issue at hand, which is true grief. And the fact that they do this within, what is it, 5 hours?
Yeah, that
they
go from, if that. They not, go, not they, even one news cycle. I mean, come
right.
On.
They go from thoughts and prayers to look at the deep state scrubbing this person's social media accounts. It's like, please, I wish I could talk to these people. I wish I could beg them to not do this. But I mean, I doubt they would ever stop because it's good for their bottom line. You know what I mean?
Fact.
So, speaking of, by the way, things that are not good for the bottom line, Washington jails have among the highest death rates in the United States, and a new law is going to explain why it isn't working. So, Spike, I looked into this. I did not know this because I have not been to prison. I have not been to jail. But looking at the state of Washington State's jails, this is bad. I mean, I am looking at images from inside of these facilities that look real. They look otherworldly. You know, they look like it something does. That you it's 1930, 1940.
It's exactly the era I would have placed this. And we're talking about, you know, this is the stuff of Hollywood movies. When you think about the most unpleasant, unclean, just horrible. And there's this mentality that criminals get what they deserve in the way of these horrific conditions. The problem is that in the state of Washington, so many county jails have let their facilities fall into these decrepit, antiquated, horrific, unsafe, unclean conditions that more people are dying in Washington jails. That we're the third worst state in America, I think it is, third or fourth?
Yeah.
Fourth worst state in America, and it hasn't always been that way. In 2008, we were about the average for inmate deaths among Washington State jails from various counties of Washington State. We have skyrocketed up of late, and it's just – there's no accountability. There is a state law that says there needs to be a uniformity of condition among county jails in the state of Washington. And of the these are 31 counties, only 4 report to this mandatory statewide accountability of the conditions of county jails.
Yeah, I'm looking at this. In 2019, it's the latest year of data available. Washington's jail mortality rate ranked 4th highest nationwide. This is not something to be proud of whatsoever. The numbers below show the death rates per 10,000 people incarcerated in 38 county jails. So you get beaten out by Colorado, West Virginia, and New Hampshire, which is just an astounding, astounding figure. If I had to guess as well, though, Spike, and not to sound like a broken record here, we have a very draconian way of visualizing the way that we, quote unquote, rehabilitate people in our criminal justice system.
Absolutely.
And this has to contribute to that, where if you put people in these kinds of awful conditions, I mean, what are you going to do other than A, become a monster, or B, become so nihilistic and destitute that you just feel as if the only thing you have to turn to is drugs or whatever in order to soothe yourself, and then eventually, you know, suicide, which is unbelievably sad.
Which is, I think, the leading cause of inmates among Washington State County jails. There's an individual mentioned in this story. It's a Seattle Times story by Sydney Brownstone.
Yeah.
A man was thrown into solitary confinement in a Garfield County jail for 18 hours. When he was booked in, he was diagnosed as having suicidal thoughts and making suicidal comments.
Yeah.
He was then thrown into solitary confinement in this image featured in the story. This looks like the stuff of horror movies. This basement,
yeah.
Isolated, solitary confinement jail cell. The man committed suicide. And
yeah.
And to make it even more horrific, he was fed meals after he had committed suicide through a slot in the door when
yeah.
No one bothered to even check on his well-being. Twice he was fed meals. That's how long after he had taken his own life, he was locked in the solitary confinement jail cell in the basement of a Garfield County jail. And that's far too common. And I don't want to point out Garfield County for any kind of special embarrassment, because this is far too common across the entire state.
Yeah, and one of the things why this is important is that I think that it's important to hold the state accountable or government accountable when it is treating, I guess the best way to put it is we have to analyze the way the state treats, quote unquote, the worst of us. Because if they're going to treat somebody that way, they're going to treat everybody that way.
Absolutely.
I think Killer Mike said it the best, which is a jail cell is one size fits all. You know who Killer Mike is?
I do know who Killer Mike is.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. So
very eloquently well-spoken man who would scare the crap out of you walking down the street.
but
thoughtful and kind and empathetic, yeah. And so well-spoken.
Right. So when I think about this, I'm advocating for the citizenry at large, because I would hate to see anybody, whether it's a career criminal or some Joe or Jane off the street who gets a drunk driving charge and they're having suicidal tendencies, end up in what otherwise looks like something out of like a Saw movie. You know,
Looks
like it's out of some, you know, you expect the Blair Witch to come out of that door right there.
Exactly. And, exactly.
Yeah. So and that's why I think it's so important, because if we're trying to hold government accountable, it starts with the people who have the least amount of power. And in this circumstance, it's someone who is literally being incarcerated. So I would hate to see myself, because I'm a narcissist. I would hate to see myself be put into that scenario. So I don't wish it on other people. But there is this I don't know, Spike. There is this thing where people say, well, what does it matter? They committed a crime, or they potentially committed a crime. So why do I care?
Well, was it the Fourth Amendment against cruel and unusual punishment?
That's the Fourth. Yep.
Yeah, I mean,
yep,
that's, yep, yep. You know, why? Because that's what, when we had all these great ideas to start the country, that was one of the founding elements of it, was that there is punishment enough to befit the crime in our legal system. And whether that punishment is incarceration or probation or community service or whatever it is, that's the punishment. Not locked into a damn crypt for 18
yeah.
hours on end and not even being looked into and look for your well-being. That's not part of the process. That goes above and beyond what a civilized society deems as adequate and just punishment for crime.
Speaking of, by the way, cruel and unusual, ketamine is a very successful treatment for people who have PTSD, people who have depression. And in particular, it's shown really great clinical progress or clinical results for people who have served in the military who have PTSD. Previously, it was available for vets who were having treatment-resistant depression. Recently, though, a lot of these clinics are closing down. Why is this, Spike? I find this to be deeply troubling.
First off, all I knew about ketamine
yeah.
was a horse tranquilizer.
Okay, well, let me break it down for you, because this is my wheelhouse, everybody. I just, you know, Andrew, you might want to get the old ding ready.
Get your bingo cards out, everybody.
So ketamine is a sedative, but it is a hypnotic sedative, which makes it slightly different from other kinds of sedatives. So it's designed in such a way to, quote unquote, tranquilize horses initially, but it also has use in people because it has a similar effect at much lower doses, right?
Okay.
Now, when you take ketamine, as I have taken ketamine, thank you very much. One of the things that happens is that you have a disassociative experience from your own body. You're not going crazy. You're not running down the street, but you're having kind of a disassociative state in your own body in which you can analyze or look at different aspects of yourself from like 8 feet away, if that makes sense. Not in a very non-judgmental, in a very non-hurtful way. And in reanalyzing yourself or actions that you've done or things that you've lived through in this kind of almost this hypnotic state, it makes them easier to process and talk about later on.
Okay.
That would be my experience.
Okay. So much like, was it vermectin, right?
Ivermectin.
Ivermectin. There are animal uses and there are human uses.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's the same with ketamine. And I had no idea that was the case. So I appreciate your experience and knowledge in the topic. What's happening to these veterans is it was ruled in 2022 that the FDA had not approved ketamine for treatment of any psychotic disorder. So these groups of military veterans, like Jack said, who have been benefiting from this managed use of ketamine for treatments for PTSD, now are scrambling to find some other method to help treat their conditions. They're very real problems from these conditions, and they had a working solution. But the FDA got involved and says, this has never been approved, and so we're taking it out of the use of these medical professionals to treat these veterans with these issues.
It's a real shame, though. We should have on Dr. Z at some point in time, because he has treated many people with medication-resistant depression with ketamine, and he's MD, PhD, Silver Fox, Robot Brain, and so he's had nothing but great results with treating patients with ketamine.
And one of the problems was that they had no idea it would be this successful. They approved limited use on a trial basis for this with veterans suffering from PTSD, but there was just an explosion of success. And then when the FDA realized how much of this was being used on such a broad scale, they said, wait a minute, it has never been approved for this use. So let's stop all the good luck or stop all the good the success and reel it in and go through the channels of getting an FDA approved for this particular treatment of this issue. But now these veterans who've been relying on this treatment to have somewhat of a normal life again are scrambling to find other solutions.
Yeah, and I can appreciate the FDA about 20% of the time, right? I don't want rotten food. I don't want, you know what I mean? I don't want certain pesticides being used. But when it comes, and this is one of the best things that I think Donald Trump ever did, when he did the Right to Try Act, where if I have a disease and my insurance company wants to pay, if I have a terminal illness and my insurance company is willing to pay for the treatment for that, the FDA can't come in and say, no, 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 you can't do that. It's one of the best things Donald Trump ever did.
But that could be a double-edged sword. Remember a couple weeks ago we had the story of the influencer who was taking apricot pits.
That's true. To
treat his own, to cure his own cancer. And he gave up himself a lethal dose of cyanide.
Yeah.
So, while often it works, oftentimes it can be tragic in its results. So,
Spike, remind me to tell you about the one time that I accidentally took GHB. Remind me to tell you about that time.
Give me a moment to look at what the hell is GHB. And then, please, someday you'll tell me about what happened when you took this.
All right. We'll take a really quick break when we get back.
We still got Nicole?
Nicole Jennings coming in. We're going to be talking about why people can't afford their lovely animals in the Pacific Northwest coming up right after this. Joins us as pet surrenders are up at Seattle Humane Society, not likely to slow down. Nicole Jennings joining us live, remote, because this is so unbelievably... I mean, you're literally outside of the Humane Society right now protesting on my behalf, correct? That's why I paid you hundreds of dollars to go down there and yell at them, yeah?
Yes, exactly. That's what I'm doing today. I'm definitely not out reporting anywhere.
Well, I know you've been bringing this story, this massive West Coast drug bust. So thank you for covering that.
It's been crazy. Oh my gosh.
this is the story that affects so many people. And this is a really heartbreaking story because I guarantee you the folks that are subjected to having such financial difficulties, they can no longer keep pets. And they're surrendering these pets to Seattle Humane Society. That's just a sad state of affairs for the community because nobody wants to do this.
Exactly. And I think, I think a lot of people have a misconception, and I admit I had the same misconception last week before I went to the Humane Society to do this story. I thought this was a case of, people following the Instagram trend during the pandemic, getting a pandemic puppy or a pandemic kitten because it was the trendy thing to do when we were all in quarantine, and then realizing after a year or two, I really didn't know what I was in for. I think I want to get rid of this animal. But I learned that I could not have been more wrong. That is not what's happening here. It's it's, I mean, we've all seen it. I had sticker shock at the gas station today. Inflation has just driven up the cost of everything. And as a pet owner myself, I have a cat. I can tell you that it's not cheap to own a pet when you factor in the pet food, especially if you want to feed them healthy food, the vet bills, all the different supplies you need. If you need to have a pet sitter to watch your pet sometimes, depending on your lifestyle. So there's a lot of costs that go into it. And unfortunately, so many people are just hurting financially right now. And so this is really just a sign of those times. Absolutely heartbreaking.
And a lot of folks are losing their place, whether it's an apartment or a house or a rental or whatever, and moving and downsizing because of the economy to a place that you can't bring pets.
Right, exactly. Housing is a really big part of that financial component, is that maybe you found somewhere a little bit more affordable to live, but they don't allow pets, or they only allow one pet, or you can't afford the pet deposit. I actually recently, this was very heartbreaking, I interviewed a Ukrainian refugee family for the 1-year anniversary of the war in Ukraine, and they'd had to leave behind their pet kittens in Ukraine with some friends, and the little girl, she was so heartbroken about leaving her pets behind, and they wanted to get her a new kitten here, but they just can't afford the pet deposit at their apartment because it's a lot of money, and they haven't been able to work yet because of their visa situation.
Can I tell you guys a happy story about the cat that I've taken into my home?
Please.
Yes, please.
So my neighbors are drug addicts, and they have a cat, and his name is Wally, and they don't take care of him. And so I started taking care of Wally, and now Wally basically lives in my house full time. And he's an indoor outdoor cat. I would prefer him not to be, but he's got, you know, things he's got to do outside. But now he doesn't even go back to their place at night. He comes to my place because he knows that daddy's got the food. You know what I'm saying?
Good on you.
So I guess what I'm saying is,
take a couple hundred more, Jack. We almost.
Well, I mean, I have two, and now I've got Wally, which is like, you know, basically like having three. But what I found is that after a period of time, you know, they weren't doing anything for him. So I put the flea meds on him, and I put the little collar on him, and it's got a little tag on it. So at this point in time, though, my thought is, like, I'm very grateful for the opportunity to be able to take care of this animal. But if they don't want him anymore, or they can't take care of him, I'm trying to figure out how to navigate that. So do I just go up to them and say, listen, I know you guys do a ton of meth and a ton of fentanyl, and I know you guys, adopted Wally from the shelter, but if you guys can't afford to take care of him, I'm more than happy to take him off your hands. I don't know how to navigate that conversation with him at this point in time. You know what I mean?
Because
he's gained about 4 or 5 pounds, which is good since I've been taking care of him because they don't feed him. And he doesn't have fleas anymore, and his little bald patches have all healed up. But now how do you approach these people and say, I'm going to steal your cat? You know?
Right. You're not, man. You're a lifeboat. And it's funny, Nicole, in your story I'm reading on MyNorthwest.com, that a lot of these situations are the Humane Society will find a temporary foster.
Different avenues you can take, and the Humane Society wants to work with you. The person I interviewed there, that is their main job all day long, you know, trying to find solutions. So that person told me that they get about 400 people a month coming with a pet saying, hey, I need help with my finances or with housing or what have you, and I'm having trouble affording this pet right now. And they can get that number down to about 200 who actually end up having to give the pet up. So there really are a lot of avenues out there. They can foster the pet for you for up to 90 days through their emergency spot program. So if you're just going to a temporary, to a shelter, or to stay with a relative for a while, they can take care of that for you. They can also help you to rehome your pet, help you kind of adopt your pet out or choose someone for your pet to go to. They can help with costs, and they are, by the way, taking donations. So if you're hearing this and want to help, if you have any gently used pet supplies, any carriers, if you have pet food around your house, cat litter, anything like that you don't know what to do with, they will happily take those donations so they can distribute them to pet owners in need.
That's so sweet. Nicole, you're doing God's work with this story. I really appreciate you, because this is an issue that's near and dear to my heart, because I find animals to be innocents. You know, they're just such little innocent creatures, and yet sometimes put them in these very difficult scenarios. So, again, Nicole, I think this is a valuable endeavor, and checks in the mail that you're down there at the Humane Center yelling at people for me on my behalf.
Cats.
Well, I'll tell you what, I certainly want to volunteer at the Humane Society
after this.
I mean, my cat means more to me than anything, and it just breaks my heart to hear that other people are not able to care for their cats and dogs. So.
And unlike kids, cats are a good investment. Trust me, I know from both.
I only have the cat so far.
I've got the kids, and trust me when I tell you, for every dollar I spent on my pets, if I'd have spent... Anyway, kids are just a bad investment. They never return.
Nicole, we don't want to take up too much of your time, and we appreciate you being out in the field, and we appreciate you calling in. So thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Nicole Jennings, you can read her article on My Northwest. And again, if you want to find out all that information that we went over in this segment, you can also go to My Northwest and check it all out. Spike, we got to figure out how I'm going to get Wally off these people's hands, because at this point in time, it's just me taking care of them. So... I got to figure out. Maybe I write him a letter.
I'm not sure if it's what the legalities are, but can you marry him? Can you literally become?
I think so.
Can you have kind of a civil union and just say, you know, the bond is inescapable now, and he's part of our family?
I think what I might do is I might just say, you know, this is everything that I've done for him. Do you want me to pay you for him, and I'll take him off your hands? Because I'd be more than willing to adopt him full time. And I'll still, you know, he can still run over to your house every so often, but just let me put my name on the microchip that they put into their body, and let's just call it a day.
There you go. That sounds like a smart way to handle it, bud.
I'm thinking so. We'll take a really quick break. When we get back, we got some hot takes and some constructive criticisms. Find out if one of yours made the show, coming up right after this. All right. That's a fun constructive criticisms here. Starting off, though, I really like this one. Someone says, this is from 206, says, what is the annoying ding sound in the background? Well, 206, you should know that one of my favorite topics to talk about is drugs, because I did drugs frequently every day of my life for about 10 years, and I did all kinds of them, and so my drug knowledge is very extensive. About 5 or 6 weeks ago, somebody texted in, and it was a really funny text where they said something along the lines of, I almost hit bingo on my Jack Stein bingo card because he talked about heroin use in the first hour. And it was really funny. And so now what we do is we play Jack Stein bingo, where if I talk about how much heroin I did or how much cocaine, thank you so much.
It's quite true.
How much cocaine I did or anything like that.
Drug dealer in your driveway is a square.
Right. Yeah. That's a drug dealer in my driveway. You know, the difference between, you know, morphine and heroin, so on and so forth, fentanyl. We could talk about, you know, LA cocaine versus Pacific Northwest cocaine. You know, we could go, we could talk about opium poppies. We could talk about GHB, PCP. We could talk about it all. So whenever I do that, we do the ding so people know that their bingo number came up. And hopefully they hit five in a row. So that's what the ding is, 206.
There you go. Oh, and with regard to Wally, lots of input there, my friend. Jennifer says, yes, Jack, talk to Wally's owners. Say exactly that, what you had said on the air there.
Yeah.
That you had invested in him and you're happy to take over his guardianship, pay them for whatever you know fees they paid to acquire him, and have your name, most importantly, your name, put on his chip, so that should anything ever happen, there's a responsible home for him to be brought to.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go do that right now. I think I'm going to walk over there and just kind of chat with him real quick. And
nice.
Be very neighborly. Capital gains going to schools. Once again, I kind of want to start with the one at the bottom, Spike, because Alex in the Upper Peninsula, really, he nailed my argument. So he says, damn it, Jack, you worthless commie. And then he says another word. This is all part of your agenda to continue to educate the next generation about things and stuff while keeping good and honest patriots from controlling government through their excessive wealth. You are dead to me now. And then he did a winky face. I appreciate, because Alex, that's my whole point. In like everybody who loses their mind about the capital gains tax, it's like, so when somebody says, what is this, 206? They're talking about the McCleary decision, which I've talked about with Frank Shires many a time, giving schools an extra $2 billion. They're talking about a $15 billion surplus. And then they say, we have been overtaxed 18%. We don't need any more taxes. 206, respectfully, we are not getting taxed. like a percentage of a population in King County is getting taxed, right? If it changes, I will be with you and I will be yelling and screaming about it every single day on this radio program. Until that point, I don't care if people have to pay, what is it, 7% graduated
7%
over
on 250 or more.
I don't care. I don't care to respect, and well, due respect.
Is, when it is you and not them, which it may be someday, you've said publicly many times that
I'm
if
fine
you're,
with it.
Yeah, you're fine with a 7% fee to make
fine.
To sell $250,000 worth of stock.
Yeah,
it's very, very community oriented of you, my friend.
Thank you very much. I'm fine. I'm a total communist as a result of that, because if I'm a wealthy person, I'm fine getting taxed. Wow, I'm a terrible human being.
I love this one with regard to virtual reality death like playgrounds.
Yeah.
In Australia. TW says, white privilege having the time and money to pontificate on death. So spot on.
Yeah.
Base on this one.
So we were talking about this virtual reality in Australia where people go and they pay a certain amount of money to
We're just
experience.
Assuming it's $350, right? That right. seems like a pretty yeah. fair estimation.
We were talking about Pilates and we were talking about yoga, and 360 says no one cares about your Pilates. You guys sound like a couple of women. That's very, very funny, because most of the women in Pilates could kick my butt. Hands down. Those ladies are very, very strong. So that's actually kind of a compliment. And then Susan says this, Spike, which I thought was very, very good advice. She says, hey, Spike, there are lots of ways to do yoga besides hot. Hot yoga is actually not good for folks with heart issues. This is actually true.
Yeah.
Says, try simple hatha, which is stretchy yoga, or yin yoga, which is kind of like a relaxed version of yoga. She says, I've taught yoga, Pilates, and dance for 30 years. Hot yoga is a fad, and you'd never see it in India. No, the reason why they heat the room is so that it is as hot as it is in India.
Ah.
When that's also, the studio I go to has been doing hot yoga for 20 years. So
I think I'm going to start with frozen yoga.
Yeah, that's
you
a
know
good
where
way.
You put yeah. gummy bears on top and some Oreo cookie crumbs and stuff. Yeah.
What else we got here? Are we all done for the day, Spike? We got any more?
I think we got them all there, my friend. We didn't mention. excuse me. I'm sorry about that. Jails.
Yes.
Jails.
Yeah, yeah.
Jeff says jails are meant to be unpleasant. It's not a resort. It should be a deterrent not to go back. While we wholeheartedly agree with you,
yes.
Jeff, it shouldn't be a torture chamber, which yes. it has resorted down to, devolved into in a lot of places in Washington state. And
yeah.
God forbid you, me, or maybe your son, Jeff, should ever get arrested one night. You don't want your kid thrown into some hellhole when all he's supposed to be doing is spend a night in the company of the fine county sheriff.
Right, and that's the point that we were trying to make, Jeff, is that when you have a prison like that, there should be an expectation that you not be put into a death box.
Amen.
That you should be, because then the state is responsible for your life at that point in time, and so we need to hold government accountable and not be all willy-nilly about it and go, well, it's not supposed to be great. Meanwhile, you got the fourth highest death rate in the nation. That's not a good number there, Jeff. All right. Hey, good job, everybody. Chris Martin, Spike O'Neill, Andrew, appreciate you as well. We'll be back tomorrow with a whole lot more Cairo Middays. Coming up next is a John Curley, Sherry Elliker show. Everybody should bug John and ask him about our phone call this weekend, because he had some interesting things to say about the capital gains tax. We'll see you guys tomorrow.